test, test. Hey, Case. Test, test, test. Test, test, test. Give that a shout.
Test, test. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, test. 1, 2. Live from Oakland.
There we go. And stick mic, stick mic. Oh, you're going to be on with Shapiro, too.
Oh, Shap's on?
In a little bit. For those of you listening on the internet already, good morning. Kevin Kirstein here, co-hosting, co-pilot.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Oaklawn Park. A very good Friday, race fan. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to us that way, online, and at our website, stevebick.com as well. And it feels like this is an entirely different venue than it was 24 hours ago, 21 hours ago, if you're listening to the replay. In fact, if you're listening to the replay, it leads right into this first visit and the first visitor. Because, of course, Gary Palmisano Jr., you're just listening to Gary wrapping up, talking about the quick response team fixing the video issues at Turfway as best they can with a new slow-mo reverse angle, so that people can see horses hitting the wire. And we talked about Derby. It is Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. And sitting across from me, a radio host in his own right, the one and only Horse Racing KK, the second KK on successive weeks to go along with Kevin Kilroy.
Well, right? That's, yeah, that's quite, you know, the following between the Prince is Gary Palmisano, as we like to nickname him. We call
the little Prince.
Gary is called the Prince, but Cage and KK. We have four KKs that work for us Derby week.
Who else?
Keith Klein and Kenny Klein.
Oh, Kenny Klein. Kenny Klein, I know.
Kenny Klein from U of L, and then Keith Klein helps our photographer team.
That's a different.
So non-related, but there's four KKs that work in the Kentucky Derby Communications Department for Derby week.
Well,
it's quite the scene.
Is there a cap on
KK? We just have to rank the KKs at some point.
Well, don't worry. You rank number one, and then they all come following in line from that point. Kevin Kirstein with us, and I guess there's no Inside Churchill Downs tonight?
You know, we kick off Inside Churchill Downs after March Madness. So,
okay. So you wait another.
We go to the farm after the fall meet. For, you know, 60 days. We need a turnout, you know.
Well, Darren needs a turnout. He really needs a turnout. Because,
yeah.
You know, the eyes get all bloodshot, and he's a mess.
But we threw everything off this year because we started a podcast inside the Kentucky Derby. So
that's right.
You know, we roll right into Inside the Kentucky Derby after Inside Churchill Downs. So we're always, you know, have the face for radio.
Well, that's and the information that everybody is looking toward. You're on quite the tour yourself, actually. I mean, I'm on the road now for it's actually almost halfway this trip, but was with you in New Orleans last week as well. And how many more of these stops are you going to make?
You know, my wife would kill me if I was on the road as much as you seem to be in the next couple of weeks. But I did the Risen Star last week here, went home for a couple of days, drove back down here to Oaklawn, got in last night, and then I'll go to the Battaglia Memorial next weekend at Turfway.
Nice.
Have a little 2-week respite, back to the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and then I'm going to go to the Florida Derby. So a couple more stops on the road to the Derby, and, you know, 10 weeks out from the first Saturday in May, we'll hit a few stops on the way.
I'll see you for Florida Derby then. I'm glad you drove, because I need a favor.
Uh-oh.
Well, I bought another printer. I seem to buy a printer everywhere I go. So I've got this printer, and I'm leaving for California on Sunday. I'm not going to. Nothing is going to ever replace my little HP that I could fit in with the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you mind hauling that to back to the Ville, and they'll be waiting for me when I come in for Derby those 2 weeks.
We'll do it at safekeeping.
Thank you.
It'll be in the office.
I was kind of watching for if there was something, because I got to go back to New Orleans too for HBPA. So this is a problem.
The road though is I mean, like, you do a rate with traveling on the road. That's what I flew to New Orleans, but I drove down here, and I feel like you just get to see a lot more of the country. Just, you know, on the drive, it gets a little bit annoying when you're, you know, late in the car ride. But I'll tell you what, I made some phenomenal stops on the way down to Oakland. I saw you made some stops on the way up here from Fairgrounds.
Yep.
It's you see a lot of America doing that.
And the best part are the things that you don't. In fact, we were talking about this with Seth Merrow on Wednesday. It's not the same anymore as when you would have a road atlas and maps in at your disposal, and you had more of a. I'm sure plenty of people plan, but even the Route 66 trip we took, I only downloaded a couple of Route 66 apps, and I bought the Route 66 guidebook, but I hadn't really mapped out, you know, where we were going to stop. I had, general ideas, but we pretty much did it on the fly, and that's how these two drives to and from Hot Springs from New Orleans, and then I went back to New Orleans last year. Won't do it this year. I'm leaving the car at Little Rock, but last year I ran into that memorial site of the Lynyrd Skynyrd crash. Bo Diddley was born and raised close by, and I want to get to that at some point. There's probably a museum. I got to meet him years ago when my buddy's band in Cincinnati opened, when the Warsaw Falcons opened for Bo Diddley at University of Dayton. I was on my way to Natchez for that. I wanted to see Natchez. I'd always wanted to see it. And then this Natchitoc that I stopped in the other day, I really didn't have time like I did last year. I was on a Sunday. So stopping there was just a revelation, and the whole thing about Steel Magnolias and Northwestern Louisiana University. And then I heard inadvertently, and there's no marker, that's where Jim Croce died.
No way.
His plane crash. His last performance was at Northwest Louisiana University.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, that's wild.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that. I forget who, I'm going to forget, I'm embarrassed to remember who sent me a note about that. Anyway, I stopped at a cute little burger joint in Hope, Arkansas, a place called Tailgaters, which was fabulous. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. I did the old cotton gin towns of Arkansas. I went northwest Tennessee. I cut down to southeast Missouri. And then I'm going through, like, cotton gin towns of Arkansas.
Wow.
I mean, it was pretty neat. And the one restaurant I wanted to stop at was actually closed for renovations. And it was right in between two cotton gins. It was just, farmlands on either side. And then you go to these big cotton gin processing plants. And apparently it sits right in between the two of them, but it's pretty cool to see, the roads of America like that. And it's only, 25 minutes longer going that way than it would be to go through, I-65 and through Nashville and then through Memphis west of there. And so it's, it beats to go these smaller road routes and see a little bit of America on the way.
Well, I'll give you a town, and I was sort of hopeful that I was going to, that the road was going to take me, that Waze was going to take me up this high road that I took on the way back to New Orleans last year. I found a barbecue joint in a town called Whitehall that was absolutely spectacular. Woodshed Barbecue in Whitehall on 270. And it's actually right before, interestingly, it was right before you got on a highway, 530. So anybody that travels 530, it's an easy dash right off of 530.
Hmm.
And it was absolutely terrific. It's funny because I turned around. I went past it, and there must have been 8 or 9 cars. And it was like 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the afternoon because I'd left here. So it's probably about an hour and a half from here.
Yeah.
And I went past, I said, I got to go back. And I turned the car around, went, and it was fabulous.
Those are usually the best kind of restaurants. You know, just sort of sitting off the side of the road and get some action there. Usually the best kind.
There was also, you know, on that drive, now I'm thinking about it. Now, that's not a pleasant, necessarily a pleasant story, but there was a town on that route, that I drove through, and actually I took a picture or two of the town, and there was actually a shooting. There was a thing maybe 3 months ago, and I heard the news report or whatever, and it caught my ear, and I realized I had driven through that town.
Wow.
Yeah, it just kind of a weird, you know, there's a lot to see.
Yes, there sure is.
In this country. A lot to see here and look forward to at Oaklawn, and we have our usual Friday get-together here, weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Twin Spires. And first and foremost, I mentioned, I said 24 hours, a completely different environment. The temperature has dropped 35 degrees.
At least, maybe more.
It's about 40 degrees. Woken up by a thunderstorm last night at about 3 o'clock, right?
Oh, yeah. Those cracks of thunder and
lightning.
It was something.
It was. And so the track was sealed up. They didn't open the track until just now in the last 15 minutes. They basically have sealed this thing tight. I think there's more rain in the forecast, and so whether we get a wet track tomorrow or not, and it seems like every Saturday here, I've looked up and it's been wet.
You remember the Rebel last year when the deluge of rain came in right as the horses were going out into the postbred? The track was still, I think, labeled as fast or good, but it was a deluge of rain that came in right before the Rebel last year.
They had to do some maintenance. There was some standing water, and they were smoothing things over and trying to, there's parts of this track that take, because of the configuration and the hill, the downhill, off to the first turn, there's a tendency here for water to pool in certain spots. So they were making special attention to, you know, making sure everything was sealed down tight. Things have lightened up a little bit, and there are some horses on the track. I doubt anybody's working at all today. In fact, the clockers aren't even. I mean, the clocking staff is basically not even on.
Actually, I'm just watching the horse break off the 3/8 pole.
Yeah. All right.
That's probably a Lucas horse.
He's or a Mott. If Riley Mott is, because Bill Mott will send him. There's a few people that send.
Yeah, but there's many that don't. There's the vast majority that. But we're on banker's hours this morning. I mean, I'm not used to this 8 o'clock starting to train. At trackside this winter, they don't train until 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern time. They go 11 to 2. It's like banker's hours. Horsemen are like the most awake I've ever seen them in my entire life.
Well, I mean, certainly today you would expect speed to be prevalent, and we'll see about tomorrow, because I handicapped last night and looked at it again this morning, and there are some races that look like they've got collapse potential.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see, because I whenever you get rain like this in advance of a race day, and the way they sealed this track up, it doesn't automatically, the cushion doesn't automatically come back to be, forgiving and even. The speed has the tendency to dominate.
How many times the Rebel since 1961 has been run over a sloppy racetrack?
Since 1961?
Since 1961.
So 60, essentially 62, 61 runnings. I'll say 29.
Three.
Really? That's bizarre.
2020, 2015, 1985.
Well, but wait a minute. What they call the track, and whether the track is actually sloppy or wet or muddy or anything, I got a hard time believing. Well, also, scheduling wise, I wonder how many of that is We should look at the date on how many on when the Rebel was run. If it wasn't, because it may have been run a little bit later when the weather has a tendency to break here. Right? I mean, they used to, because don't forget, they used to run the Arkansas Derby 2 weeks later than they're running it now.
I'm pulling it up right now on KentuckyDerby.com/media as we look at the Rebel. And back in the day, so they ran it, it was always in
February?
It was in March.
In March.
It didn't move to February until, last year.
Yeah, that's a big part.
So it was always this, like the first or second week in March, and then, you know, used to be run at the end of March, like you said, with the Arkansas Derby. So
that's a big part, because the weather, in fact, somebody said to me, they said, are you coming back for Derby? I said, I can't this year. And they said, I'll be in Florida. And they said, oh, you're going to, you know, because the weather will be so much nicer. And that is the case. It's like they throw a switch here, and all of a sudden the blossoms, you know, the apple blossom. That's the whole racing festival in the South. The whole idea.
I think we just were bringing the bad weather with us, because it was cold in New Orleans.
It
when we were
cold.
There from the Rosen Star, and then, you know, 2 days later during the Mardi Gras, you know, festivities,
it was gorgeous.
And then now here it's cold. I mean, maybe it's just us. Maybe it's just us.
Well, I've been...
So Florida's going to have record cold for the Florida Derby.
Yeah, no, I've had cut some tough sledding on that front. Although Tina sent me a picture of the security camera of her out there with the snowblower at home the other day. So I can't complain. It wasn't there. They got less snow than they expected. There was like a dusting, but she still had to get it off the driveway. Well, speaking of nice weather, let me slip in this one piece of news before we start talking the racing. Del Mar yesterday announced as the 2024 Breeders' Cup site. If you didn't see this, back-to-back California visits. I would imagine they haven't announced the return to Keeneland, right? I would think the Churchill in 25 would be a likely.
That's way above my pay grade of negotiating that. But
you would think that they'll come.
I had a blast when Breeders' Cup was at Churchill when I was working there in 18. It's so much fun to be able to be a part of an event like that and have the best horses in the world converging. I just remember, you know, when the when Enable shipped in from, it was like, gosh, I think like 12:45 a.m. she got in that day, that night, and I was at the quarantine barn because I wanted to see her come in, and they were, you know, scrambling to get her off the van because they said she was tying up. I'll never forget it. It's like a moment that I'll never forget. Is like, you know, here's this, you know, superstar filly, the story of the Breeders' Cup, and they're, you know, hustling to get her off the van. She was fun. Obviously, we saw what she did. But, yeah, the Breeders' Cup at Churchill was a lot of fun when I was working there in 18. That was my one Breeders' Cup. I went there as a fan twice and saw Zenyatta get beat to Blame, and heard Travis Stone from way down on the other side of the grandstand when he was cheering because he cashed a big bet on Blame, and he was the only one. I think everyone else was sort of sobbing and crying and all. But, Breeders' Cup at Churchill is a lot of fun.
Well, I watched it on the track apron with Lenny Shulman and Steve Haskin. You know, right against, you know, you basically walk out. It's actually amazing. There's a couple of amazing ways to watch those kinds of races at Churchill. One is right there on the track apron, and actually, I'm amazed that they actually even let us on there. I don't know if that has changed, but we were standing right there. And then the other, for Derby, done a couple of times, is watch from the infield, watch from the grass the cupola. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. When you get the crowd and the noise coming towards you.
The wall
instead
of noise.
It's unbelievable.
Well, and I've gotten a couple of amazing photographs from in there. I think it was authentic or audible? It was wet.
Was that when Authentic beat Tisalaw in
the
20 Derby?
No. This goes a little couple of years. It was Pletcher.
Audible was Pletcher.
It was Audible.
Yeah.
It was Audible. I got a. What was cool about the picture is you got the soldiers,
National Guard.
The National Guard lined up there.
Yeah.
And I'll show it to you. I love that picture. And I got the famous picture I got of Durkin. So that's the same year, because that was, which one was, West Point had a hand in one of those. And was that audible?
They all run together. Yeah, it was probably. I think he was one of, like, the bigger partnerships that the West Point, Winstar conglomerate started.
I'll show you those. Both those pictures are, I'll put them up. They're great. Well, all right. Del Mar for 24, and of course, actually, that would coincide with you guys finishing the renovations too with 25.
Yeah, the renovations will be done for Derby 2024
right.
for the paddock.
So 25 would be probably perfect.
We need you as a lobbyist.
Yeah, between the state of Kentucky and what they, you know, and now that Keeneland's in part of their, I mean, right now the regular rotation is obviously set. I mean, with Del Mar, Santa Anita, Churchill, and Keeneland, it's just a clip clop, and round and round we go. So that until Belmont gets renovated and Belmont can go back into the rotation. So if you didn't see that piece of news, there it is. Everything else is really, you know, obviously no racing in California because of the cold snap there and, you know, the blizzard conditions in the mountains and rain, tons of rain expected. So, and Hammer even reached me yesterday and said, listen, we may, he said, what, he was asking about what we need to do the show, and he said we may not be able to sit out at Clocker's Corner. I have a hard time believing it can be any colder than it was when I was there in December. When people could hear my teeth chattering.
That's not California weather.
Craziness.
Yeah,
craziness when I was out. It was you know, well, in the mornings, even when it gets into the 60s and 70s during the winter, it's still going to be 37, 38, 40 before the sun comes up at Clocker's Corner. I mean, it's still cool there no matter what. And then it warms up, you know, quickly. But, I don't know what to expect. And here's the funny thing. I brought, other than this jacket, which is a Santa Anita Breeders' Cup jacket from when? From a long time ago.
2013.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't wear it for years, so it's, you know, it's one of those things that still looks, you know, new. I didn't bring any sweaters. I didn't bring any. I've got a vest. I've got a barber, you know, quilted vest. That's the only thing I brought for insulation. You, look at you. You're
well,
North Face. You're all set.
Yeah, I got the North Face Triple Crown jacket. I got the jacket underneath it. It's cold. That's why I like driving, because I just, you know, my trunk in my car is set for all four seasons being at the racetrack, because sometimes you can start the morning off and it's freezing, then the sun will pop out and it'll be hot. So, you know, I feel like I have my entire clothing wardrobe in the trunk of my car, and so luckily I was able to scrounge out this jacket that I didn't realize was in there.
Well, some early impressions. You got some Rebel thoughts before we bring on your man Shapiro?
You know, the Rebel, I think, is a fascinating race because from a betting standpoint, where, you know, you have a verifying at the drawing the rail and you got some pace in this race. So I think it's going to be, you know, a little bit interesting to see what position Florent Giroux gets him in the early stages of this race, just because of, you know, where he's could be positioned in this race. Giant Mischief, I believe there's some distance questions with him. And then you have the Asmussen trio, who, you know, Steve is obviously, you know, North America's all-time winningest trainer. In my mind, one of the greatest trainers of all time, if not the greatest trainer of all time. And Gunpilot, I feel like he's a horse that's, you know, sort of rounding into his own. And we saw what he wanted to do last time, and that was just sit right off of the pace. He sort of ended up on the pace in that verifying allowance win here at Oaklawn. And so he's able to sit off the pace and have a target, and I think he's going to have the perfect race shape for it on Saturday. And he's going to probably offer some value, too. And so he's a little intriguing to me. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of question marks with some of the other horses that are going to take some more action than him.
Yeah, it felt like there were two, maybe even two and a half strata of contenders here with Verifying and Giant Mischief, little Reincarnate. At 10-1, Red Root 1, I think deserves plenty of attention. And then you mentioned Gunpilot. I'll tell you who else is not far off of this is DeSormo with this confidence game.
He's one of these horses that's confused me a ton, because when he won his allowance race at Churchill, and he defeated Rocket Can that day, and I thought Rocket Can maybe was hanging a little bit. He just didn't want to go by them, and then Rocket Can obviously showed up and matured as a three-year-old, winning the Holy Bull impressively, and so then confidence game came back, and he ran third. He was beaten, I think, seven lengths, and so he's just sort of confused me a little bit, but, you know, DeSormo shipping in here from Fairgrounds obviously means a lot in what he thinks highly of this horse, and so, you know, he doesn't, I don't think, ship from his Fairgrounds base much in the wintertime. He keeps those top three-year-olds based down there, and so $1 million plus, you know, 50 Derby points on the Championship Series will get your attention. Event Detail, Steve, is another one that I think is going to outrun his odds, too, and, you know, I saw Don Chatlos last night, who's the racing manager for OXO, and, you know, they're thinking pretty highly of this horse, and when he broke his maiden that day at Turfway, he was wider than wide into that first turn, and he was very impressive, and so, you know, they're trying to see if he can find a spot and like the dirt, and feel like, I think the Sheets numbers came back on him as one of the fastest in this race, too. He's 30-1 on the line.
And I thought he was a nibbler as well. If after breaking the maiden, and of course gets back on dirt, and I mentioned yesterday, Wednesday, kind of going through the field and giving everybody a taste, that debut on dirt came against Corona Bolt and Communication Memo, and they've obviously, and even and Carcano, those horses.
And he got bet that day, too, I think, right? He
was 6-1.
Yeah, in a solid field at Churchill. And so, he wasn't a slouch in there by any means.
Who was the Into Mischief that there was a... Is that of an Into Mischief mare? There we go. And the family, the dam is a half to a couple of stake winners. Oxity, wow, that's a name I haven't seen in a long time. Wow. And Quich as well, two stake winners out of that family. So interesting. This field is different from what we saw last week because you've got horses that have already established a fairly high benchmark in terms of how fast they are, in essence.
It feels like, last week I left the Risen Star with more questions than answers when Angel of Empire won. It's, what do we think of that field? And, I think the Louisiana Series on the road to the Kentucky Derby has been extremely key in the last few years. And so, but that race, like you said, it was, who's can step up, if any of them, and then this race, you've sort of seen this, top form and in a lot of these horses and that have established, who they are.
Yeah, verifying, even with the, he was 17-1 in the Breeders' Cup. It's not like he was, one of the favorites, but he's kind of split the field. He kind of ran evenly, but other than that, he's done little wrong. Finishing behind Blazing Sevens in the Champagne, and then the smashing season opener mid-January. So fun field for the Rebel, and we should also touch on the Honeybee for the Oaks, the Oaks side of things, heading to the Fantasy, and this has got a kind of a similar storyline. There's about three or four horses that seem the clear likely types, and then there's one or two nibblers. And the times I've looked at it, the horse I keep coming back to is Wet Paint for Cox and Godolphin.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to start at the Martha Washington and say, what do you think of that race with Wet Paint taxed and Defining Purpose, the top three all returning in this spot. And how about the Hard Luck Toehead, who's a filly had, she ended up crossing the wire first in that, non-wagering event at Saratoga when the starting gate malfunctioned and was caught on the racetrack. And then she comes back at Kentucky Downs two starts later in the Juvenile Fillies and, gosh, ran her eyeballs out to finish second to Chop Chop. And, has sort of found herself, some better form here on the dirt. She broke her maiden on the dirt two starts back at Churchill on Stars of Tomorrow and then came down here to Oaklawn to win that allowance race. So she's intriguing as well. It's I do think that Wet Paint will probably go off as favored. She's 7-2 on the line, the second choice, and then I think Grand Love Kovalev was made the 3-1 favorite for Asmussen and Three Chimneys. So, yeah, I'd say six of them I wouldn't be surprised out of the 12 that could win
this
race.
That's fair. And there's actually a couple of prices. You mentioned Taxed. Taxed is outposted in the 12 hole and was given a big number, too. It was 15-1. The price that, just because I look at him, I look at his horses seven times, you know, every time I look at these races at Oakland, yeah, this Chris Hartman is just piling up wins. It's kind of obscene. But Condensation is 12-1 in here and Stretched Out with a Plum. And I just, even though there's other speed in here, I just have to.
The great Peter Patel owns this one, who owns Sissy's Liquors right behind Churchill Downs Backside, right off of Longfield.
Good job.
So great silks. It's you know, tan silks with a bottle on his back. So yeah, and he, I don't even look, Steve, at Chris Hartman's form of the horses at Oaklawn. I just circle them to use them on my tickets.
It's very hard. You know, there is a stretch out as well for the Leblongs and Norm Cassie, Effortlessly Elegant, and it just feels like a pace has got to be prompted, because Grand Love wants to go as well, even though that's route speed. And then here's Condensation, who stretched out and broke on top, 23 flat, 47-3, but effortlessly elegant with that maiden breaker at the end of January, 22 flat, 45-4. So you know that from the rail, Ricardo Santana Jr.'s got no choice. And then the horses from the outside that have an interest in being at least, you know, gaining position. I mean, this race is a mile and a 16th, so there's not a lot of room to maneuver before you get to the turn. So Taxed is going to have to find position. Bayerano aboard for Randy Morse, and Olivia Twist too for Fincher. She, you know, she's going to be hard pressed, and she wants to be part of the early lick as well. So it feels like, you know, mid-pack stalker type. That's why Wet Paint, you come back to her over and over again, because she figures to sit a perfect mid-pack trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Flavian Pratt gets back aboard her. Brad Cox is in town. He's, you know, ready for another big weekend. I feel like this Road to the Derby and Road to the Oaks is just, you know, centered around Brad Cox. And wouldn't be surprised if he's got another top filly in the barn pointing towards the first Friday in May.
You know, I hadn't really thought much about her. The New York bred, the Dialed In, Gallagher's stud crafted, $200,000 Saratoga, New York yearling purchase for Rapoli, Gambling Girl. And she has not been worse than fourth. And Pletcher sees fit to send her here. And Todd's been, everything he's been sending anywhere has been viable.
Yeah, we saw what happened in the Rachel Alexandra, you know, the other week. And so, you know, he sends a horse in, runs second.
And the fairgrounds.
Yeah. So,
or the mine shaft.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you never can leave off Pletcher, leaving a stretcher, as one person told me. I'll never forget. I was in college. I was a junior in college. I'm sitting in the simulcast area at Churchill, and you know, I'm gambling, and the guy next to me said, "Leave off Pletcher, leaving a stretcher." And I said, never forget it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I got to admit. There's some maiden races. I do want to mention one note. I suppose it'll come up later, maybe. As you try to negotiate this card, I will tell you that middle pick five is made really treacherous by the sixth. There's a three-year-old filly's going three quarters, and it's a quagmire, the sixth. Very, very tough, and it also starts the middle pick four, races six through nine. From a pedigree note standpoint, the fourth early on the card, this is the boys going long, and McPeak has got a Hertrick fielding number for Walking L Thoroughbreds and Harold Lerner, Seeking Unity, that is obviously the horse to beat, and I think was what had to be a short. Where's the pricing? 6-5, yeah, makes sense. However, take a note, go even a little further outside. Jane Lyon, Summer Wind, has got a horse with Riley Mott, qualified. This is the quality road out of Little Indy, the Aniseed mare that got maximum security. And this horse ran kind of an even debut at Indiana when Brad Cox had him. He's been gelded for this and makes a three-year-old debut. Also gets, he did get Lasix in the debut. And then there's a Mike Rutherford on the outside for Asmussen on the stage. This is a third-generation Asmussen product that Steve training this one as well as that dam. And Cheryl Asmussen trained the second dam, as it happens. That dam stage play, the Curlin mare, she won the Silver Bullet Day and the Rags to Riches, you might remember.
Pretty okay.
Yeah, and this one was 4-1 in the debut. That came here, ran an even race. That was in Mamzouj maiden win. Lucas has a firster for Calumet. Kind of an interesting group. Mac Robertson, Tahoe Run from the rail.
You haven't mentioned the horse that I like in here yet. Stormin' Army.
Stormin'
Army. Dave Vance. 20-1 on the line.
Look at you.
I blew a ton of money horse in debut.
Ooh, look at those bullets.
He's stretching out, adding blinkers. Maybe we'll have to get Taylor down there to give us a little insight on those back-to-back bullet works. Maybe add the blinkers in those works. But he showed every bit of ability going into his debut, and he was, I think, 12-1 on the line that day, and the buzz was out, and he got bet down to 5. And he ran well that day. He ran second, and he came back on the Arlington Million card. You know, I don't know if it was, you know, too much time between those races and maybe needed it a little bit, and then resurfaced back down here. But now he stretches out for Dave Vance, and he looked like he could be anything leading into that debut. And so I'm willing to try and get some of my money back that I blew on him in that debut.
Look at you. Nice job. This is an Army Mule. Well, it was an $80,000 purchase out of a forestry mare, and the bullets kind of scream a little bit for the Vance barn. So an interesting maiden fourth early on the card. It's a 12 race card that ends with a Arkansas bred maiden special weight. We had some Arkansas breeding conversation yesterday with Clinton Stewart about the new Leadham Farm, a little south of here, and that was fun. The third race is a money allowance, $106,000 allowance, with a lot of familiar horses, and this is no picnic. Caddo River is in here. Riley Mott has got Mystic Knight. Did you look at this?
Yeah.
Mystic Knight, there's two prices in here that are intriguing, as it happens. Mystic Knight is 15-1, and Trident Hit for Moquette is 12-1. Mystic Knight was a horse that Chad Brown had been training and went through the ring in November and was picked off. Riley signed the ticket for $120,000 for Mr. Sella. Hmm. And I got that old theory that my buddy Phil Melnick years ago posited, which was big days, big owners. And
he's a big owner.
Yeah, fairly big here. And horsemen are acutely aware of wanting to have their top owners get a walk to the winner's circle on days like this, an Arkansas Derby Day, etc. So I don't know. Mystic Knight, second off the layoff, ran around the track in that first race in January. That in fact, Caddo River was involved. I mean, Caddo River at least put some wins together middle of last year after kind of foundering around. But this is a very, very good group. Trident Hit, second off a long layoff. And what's funny about this is Moquette, it's as many things as Ron does well, this isn't something where he's got stats that back him up and get you excited. He's 0-16 over the last 18 months, second off the layoff.
Huh.
So there's some mixed signals because Trident Hit certainly has run races, including at this racetrack, that are good enough to win this. They, you know, Davey Jacobson's only had 3 starters so far at the meet, but here's Thomas Shelby, who's a horse we've certainly bet on when he's won here and has run well here at a high level. And Davey's now had him for five starts, and he's been solid. He needs to get back to that good six-year-old form at this point, or five-year-old form, but he seems to be kind of circling toward a good effort. So I would not dismiss Thomas Shelby out of this either, but he's 4-1. To me, he's much more attractive at 8-1 or so.
Yeah, I would think, you know, maybe some others may get bet a little bit too, and so I may think that 4-1 will get a little inflated, at least in my mind looking at this race. I guess, you know, how much action will Frosty Grace take, who's the 2-1 favorite off the big, you know, conditioned open 62.5 claiming event last time out. Caddo River, who scratched out of the Razorback too, will probably take some more money as well. And, you know, I think that's, you know, the two big players. How much will they take? Max Player on the outside's run against some top competition. He's not for me, but he returns to the allowance ranks, maybe looking for a little bit of a confidence booster. So the money will be interesting to see who ends up, you know, going off as favorite and who could take some of that sneaky money with those layoff lines that we see from a lot of these horses.
Well, speaking of sneaky money, let's get sneaky money Scott Shapiro in here, right? We got to get Shap, and I'm here. I'll put it right here. So
Shap was texting me.
Was he? What
yeah,
was he saying?
He was listening live.
He's ready to go?
He is. Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
Look at what's going on out here.
I know. It's another deluge again.
It's unbelievable. The weather here is from hunger, as we said. I don't know if your grandparents would use the expression nicht good, meaning not good.
Yeah.
Scott Shapiro, good morning.
Good morning. Sorry to be texting KK while this wonderful two-man conversation is taking place, but I was taking notes.
Well, you were giving me motivation, Shap. You were really making me be in my top form here. It's just Bick and I and the clockers in the press box, and hearing from you on my phone always gets me, you know, another extra pep in my step.
That's what I'm here for, man. That's what I'm here for, to keep you pushing along. I know you're there for the same, to keep me moving in the right direction.
Well, and so now we've come up with a good new nickname for Scott, which is Peppy Steppy.
Like, I don't have enough. Jeez.
Well, you were so much fun last week, and that from whether it was a salad at Leoise's or I will tell you that Privman was very appreciative of you sending him your barbecue shrimp po' boy photo.
I had to redeem myself. I was I've been embarrassed coast to coast with salad, a harmless salad purchase getting off the plane. I've been really thrown through the ringer on this one, but I'm glad to make everybody happy.
I will admit to having had a Oriental chicken salad over at Cafe 1217 on Malvern Avenue. If you've never been to,
I will not hold it against you, Steve. I promise you.
Thank you.
Shap and I had a lunch date a couple weeks ago for salads.
Where'd you go?
We went to, where did we go, Shap? What was that place called?
Well, we went to the one place, fully approved place, but they were 30-minute wait, and we ended up in McAllister.
30-minute wait?
Yeah, at lunchtime. So I made Shap buy McAllister's for me. We each got the same thing.
Crazy.
No, that was an offer. That was not a make. That was an offer.
Oh, that's why you're the greatest.
Marcus Hirsch is going to join us at the top of the hour, and we'll do some recapping, of course, with Marcus from last weekend. But Scott, for your purposes, the trip to New Orleans and what we saw Saturday at Fairgrounds, any feedback?
Well, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I think with Kevin hearing his response, and also listening to the Inside Kentucky Derby podcast where him and Darren recapped the race, I think we kind of left with more questions than answers in many ways. I think the winner is a horse, Angel of Empire, that we know is not going to have any problem getting the distance as they move forward, but got a good setup, got a really good ride, not surprising from Luis Saez. Same could be said of Sun Thunder. But, you know, are they going to be horses that are going to thrive in the Kentucky Derby where, you know, outside of last year, being up a little closer has been where you want to be if you want to get to the wire first. And then obviously in the Rachel Alexandra, disappointments from Hoosier Philly, who, you know, I know she had trouble at the start and wasn't comfortable. And I could have forgiven her if she made a big run and just missed. But I think great horses are supposed to overcome that kind of trouble. So I'm left wondering if she's just a horse that was a great two-year-old that's not going to move forward. And Chop Chop was disappointing as well. So I think it really opened up things for the Kentucky Oaks between that and the Tampa Bay race. A lot of the potential stars have kind of fallen flat. But Kevin had a real good pick with pretty mischievous in there. Got a good price on that one. But yeah, lots more questions than answers. Hopefully we get some more answers where you guys are at tomorrow.
We'll see. The one sort of bugaboo that that does have potential again with this next round of preps is a wet track potential. And you know, we went through this. Well, what Derby Oaks run up was it 2 years ago? Where remember we had like every weekend, every prep was run on a wet track, and you kept postponing any real valuable insight because the results don't reflect necessarily, you know, where everybody's going to end up and what their quality is.
No, I totally agree. It's always, you know, I'm not a wet track guy in general, but there's definitely some wagering opportunities that can be taken advantage of in cases. But in terms, you know, we only get a few chances to see these horses leading up to the first Saturday in May. And when you add a wet track, yep, to you know, already trying to figure out young horses, it just adds a whole additional layer to an already tough analytical puzzle. So we'll hope for the best. Are we going to have any chance of not having a wet track tomorrow?
I haven't checked back, but I mean, we're getting exactly what they said we should anticipate today. And last when I looked, I think on Wednesday or yesterday, we were talking 60-something percent chance, which is what today was supposed to bring as well. So what do you got, Kev?
It looks like there's some spotty showers, but, you know, nothing too major. So who knows? Maybe if we're dry for the rest of the day and into the morning tomorrow. I don't know. I'm a horrible meteorologist. Meteorologists are like handicappers. You guys got to be right, you know, 20 to 30% of the time, and you look like a genius.
Well, these, you know, you're in the mountains, you know, these Washita Mountains, and that'll always, you know, throw you a curveball the way, you know, weather patterns. But it just has seemed every time there's potential here this winter for weather, they've gotten it. So I don't know. At the very least, at the very least, the way they sealed this track, and I'm sure now with training, as soon as training's over, they'll seal it again. Or tighten it up even more. So the prospects don't seem ideal, but you know, what are you going to do? We play this game outdoors, as they say.
My saying at Churchill is rain, rail, Lannery. I just need to find the jock here at Oakland that's not afraid to go to the pine at the top of the lane and be all right
in the wet weather. Historically, years ago anyway, the inside was not the place to be, even under those circumstances, because the water would, you know, the track had a pretty steep banking. And you also had the crazy thing that John White and Randy Moss had come up with, which is that it's an uphill. It used to be anyway, an uphill stretch, and made for, you know, the water, you know, kind of coming down and up the stretch, and so the inside was not a great place to be. But that, you know, those are some of those things are apocryphal.
Maybe it'll be.
I think it's been a good being in like the inside pocket, like the trip KK speaks of that Lannery has. It seems like it's been a good trip this meet. Obviously, the way it plays with, you know, precipitation or moisture in the track will obviously be a bit of a wild card. But I've seen a lot of those kind of Lannery type trips get the job done this meet.
Well, what are we looking at for you tomorrow? What's your preference?
Well, I mean, I got a lot of prices on top tomorrow. Not that there's not legitimate favorites in these races, but I know Kevin's probably not on this side. I heard you mention in the Rebel. I think the Rebel's really wide open. I think that Verifying and Giant Mischief as well as Reincarnate are definitely the ones to beat. But I got some questions. I mean, Reincarnate ran that last race kind of out of nowhere, a huge number. If he replicates the effort, it'll be tough, but Can he do that? Giant Mischief, talented horse, but kind of heard rumblings that, you know, a little bit of concern about whether as the distances get longer, whether he's going to be at his best. And then Verifying, who I think is the clear one to beat, the inside draw could be a little tricky. I think there's a lot of speed towards the outside, and he might have to earn it either by getting a very aggressive ride or by showing us a little bit of a new dimension, relaxing on the inside. And I think Red Route 1, I picked him on top, but it's more of a horse that I just think has a real good shot at a good price to hit the board, and I'm going to build trifecta wagers nice. With him in all three slots because I just think he's a horse that we know can finish. He was easily second best in the Southwest, but obviously no factor up front. So those kind of horses can be scary when they don't get the right setup. But I think he's a horse that appears to be doing well. And then I heard you talking about confidence game and a pretty confident move by Keith DeSormo to ship this horse into Oaklawn instead of, you know, waiting to run in his back door like he did last year like he did with Call Me Midnight. So I think confidence game, who was a part of the pace that fell apart in the LeCompte, can hit the board at a big price here. So I think it's a really fun race. Like I said, hopefully, we learn more than we did, last weekend in the Risen Star.
Yeah, and I love the approach to Red Route 1, which basically is a key horse. I mean, the kind of horse that you build around. And if he wins, fine. You know, the wind punch is the wind punch. But, you know, if you've got him underneath some of the logicals or even the reverse tri-key concept, I agree. And, you know, it's funny. I very frequently let Scott Blasey know figures, you know, with their particularly with the maidens. And we were, I guess it was in the prep, right, in the Southwest, that we were talking some other horse, and he said, what did Red Route 1 get? And I pulled up the figure, and he goes, good. He said, that horse is okay. He said, they were very excited about his progress.
I love it. I mean, he got back on the thoroughgraphs. He got back to his top in that race.
I saw that, actually. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It's a good jumping off point for a 3-year-old that should pair up or go forward. All right. So Red Route 1 has a 10-to-1 idea. The 3, of course, and the 11. Where else? Honeybee?
The Honeybee, I thought Wet Paint got the right setup in the Martha Washington with Divine Purpose and Defining Purpose and Olivia Twist kind of going at it on the front end. So I was willing to let her as well as Grand Love beat me. Grand Love didn't really move forward in those starts after the maiden breaking performance at Saratoga, where she somewhat surprised the field at 9-2 that day. You mentioned Toehead Kevin before I came on, and this is a horse that really took a big step forward relaxing along the inside last time. I like her chances. She does not like to get passed in the lane. She has been, you know, somewhat tough luck, but the luck has kind of turned around. It's going to be tough. She's going to have to relax against a really good group along the inside, or she could get caught up in an early battle. But I like her. I think Defining Purpose will bounce back. I think she'll be further off the pace this time. She kind of broke too well in the Martha Washington, kind of putting her into the race more than I think she needs to be. So I think she can sit a good mid-pack type trip. And then Gambling Girl interests me. You mentioned Todd Pletcher shipping anywhere these days works out well. I mean, his numbers are incredible shipping into Oaklawn Park. 66 starts, 27%, 319 ROI. And I think there's pacing here, and I think this is one of the horses that can finish. So I'm going to use those 3 with Toehead being the top pick.
Very good. 9-2, and you should get that. I mean, that's the beauty of these, the field size that we're looking at, 12 in the Honeybee, 11 in the Rebel. Okay, what else?
The other stakes race, I think, has upset potential as well, the Carousel, which is race 7. Pretty Birdie and Ugiri, I think, are the most talented runners in this race, but they both have similar running styles, particularly with Ugiri drawn towards the inside. I think there's some other speed in here. And number 1, Easy Command, is in tremendous form and has shown an affinity for this course. She did get a good setup when we saw her win on January 14th, but she took advantage, and she's going to get another good setup the way I see it in here. Should be able to save ground towards the back and make a big run. So if we can get anywhere near 10-1, I think Hazy Command is worth a gamble. And then maybe playing her underneath the two aforementioned favorites, who maybe one will put the other away or get the jump on the other, and Hazy Command can kind of pass the rest of them and finish second.
I completely agree with that, and especially given the speed that's involved here, that does include the logicals and the favorites and even the next tier. The other horse with Amos, with Hazy Command, who's won two in a row since coming here to start the season, you got to look outside to Cherie. Johnny V gets aboard Mercy Warren. If Mercy Warren runs back to that last one, she's a major player here. And you got 8-1 on her.
Yeah, that race kind of came out of nowhere.
Yes, it did. I mean,
she ran two good races last year in the spring, but those were much, you know, suspect fields. You know, she handled them, so you don't want to knock her for it. I think this is a big step up, but she should get the right trip under a pretty good jockey.
Well, and, you know, you look at other speed. I'm the Boss of Me is going to be part of this pace. You mentioned the two, you know, major players, Pretty Birdie and Ugiri. You've also got American Lily for Peter Miller, for Kaleem Shah. And, you know, this thing could boil over very, very quickly. The nice thing about Cherie's horse, and you know, Johnny, you know, his tendency is always to go forward, but if you look at that win where she romped, she didn't have the lead off the break. She basically cruised to the lead, and all Mercy Warren's got to do is follow I'm the Boss of Me, essentially, and let that one be the guide. Let those three horses spar up front. And I would think that Johnny gets the outside open air box where the air is fresh and clear, the Marty McGee.
Good stuff there. Good stuff. I have a long shot in the finale, a state bred special weight event that I've been waiting to come back. It's a bit of a reach. It's number 5, 4 Dice. This is a son of Texas Chrome that debuted in mid-January, and I know he went off at 25-1, but when the wagering started, he took noticeable support for, essentially for my handicapping, no good reason, and just slowly drifted up. He broke fine, he didn't show any speed, got a little lost, and then he really picked it up late, galloped out big. And the trainer, Furman Soto, has tried to get this horse into special weight events multiple times since then. And he's been on the also eligible list and not drawn in. He finally gets in here. Like I said, it's a reach. This is a pretty good field. You've got Midnight Taxes for Hartman taking on Arkansas Breds for the first time. Same Time and Beyond, who debuted at Keeneland for Moquette. And an interesting firster in Table Money, but at that price, number 5, 4 Dice is going to be a play for me at 30-1.
Look at you.
Wow. Look at Shapper. If this horse wins, Shap, can you buy me another salad?
No, I'm expecting you to take down the late pick 5 and buy me 2 salads.
If I take down the late pick 5, you better hope I'm not throwing dice in the
hey
casino
now.
After
oh,
that.
Hey now.
2 dice, not
yeah,
4. Not
exactly.
4. Yeah.
All right. Did you happen to peruse the Wintergreen at Turfway?
I did, and I wasn't quite as creative, to say the least, in there.
Jonathan,
I think
Long.
Opening Buzz,
yeah,
has really found a home on the all weather.
Yep.
She didn't run all that well at Keeneland in her first start for Wong, but she hasn't gotten out of the gate in 2 straight starts and has just showed a lot of run. I think she's a cut above these. Obviously, getting out of the gates well is going to help her in the long run here, but I didn't really have much desire of beating her. I thought Candy Raid was a tiny bit interesting, a horse that clearly is better at Turfway than she is anywhere else, and she should come with a good late run. But, yeah, I was chalky in the stake at Turfway.
Outstanding. I came up the same way. I thought that Opening Buzz would be very tough. This move, I have not had a chance to reach out to Jonathan Wong, but this was a very clever move to take those Tommy Town horses and others from San Francisco and come to,
yeah,
to Turfway. Very, very clever.
Yeah, he's done well. It hasn't been quite as easy for him as you would suspect, as it, you know, often is in Northern California, but it's great to have him with so many horses in town, and hopefully he sticks around and has a presence felt at the spring and summer and fall.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Chap 34. Is that a wrap?
Yeah, that's a wrap. I just wanted to mention a couple Twin Spires things real quick.
Absolutely.
The Road to the Derby competition continues on. Another 50 points to the winner. Had a little bit of a shakeup, or quite a bit of a shakeup last week. The leader now has 169 points, Michael from California. There's a Oaklawn late pick five, hit it and split, $5,000 additional up for grabs. And so whatever you hit, you'll split $5,000 additionally from everybody on Twin Spires only that hits it. And then there's the winter money back that's at Oaklawn tomorrow. All three stakes races are eligible for that, the Carousel, the Honey Bee, and the Rebel. And you get money back up to $10 if your horse runs second or third. So a bunch of good stuff going on, particularly at Oaklawn this weekend.
Outstanding. Opt in and opt in again.
Yes.
With Scott Chap. Money back, money bags.
Money bag Chap.
Yes.
Another nickname.
I don't want the money back. I want the winner.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's
good,
a good point.
Insurance. Good insurance.
Good point.
Good insurance.
Chap, I appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week from one of your favorite venues, the Great Race Place from Clocker's Corner.
Nice. Well, have fun, guys. Keep the weather away as much as possible, and let's get some winners.
There it is. Scott Shapiro, everybody, and... beautiful. First hour in the books. We're going to take the break right here. We'll come back. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us. We've got Scully coming. We got Hammer, Nick Tamaro, Papo, and I think I'm forgetting somebody. Let me see. Let me look. It's a funny situation, obviously, with California canceled. No, I guess that's it. I will mention, did I mention Steve Crist yesterday?
I don't think so.
I don't think I did. I think it came afterward. Tuesday next week, they will announce the finalists for the Hall of Fame voting. And Steve reached out to me and said it's a really good and interesting set of nominees, finalists.
That's a tease.
It really is. And Steve has been, you know, I won't say elusive, but I've certainly, you know, there have been some topics that have, you know, bubbled to the surface in the game where I've sought Steve's insights, and he's kind of begged off, actually. He's got the horses that, you know, that he and his partner are involved in, and have had some success. But we've heard more from Andy Beyer since the two of them kind of pulled back from, you know, mainstream media appearances and assignments. But they do come here when they got something to say.
They know where to go.
Yeah. So Steve Crist next week, 11 o'clock, Brian Bouye from the Hall of Fame. He'll announce the finalists, and then Steve has got some thoughts. And we'll certainly add a couple of other topics to Steve's appearance, guaranteed. Do you have anything to plug? Are you doing a set at Yuck Yucks or anything?
Yuck Yucks.
Any stand-up?
I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of the time here at Oaklawn. I may go to DeLuca's tonight.
We should go to DeLuca's. And in fact, I don't know if this is a publication. Is it? I guess Anthony Valnati, of course, DeLuca's, now with the new location in Little Rock, is getting a visit either tomorrow or Sunday from Dave Portnoy.
Oh, boy.
So I don't have to wish Anthony luck, because we know how good the pizza is, but the timing happens to be opportune for Anthony with the new location in Little Rock. So, best wishes to DeLuca's, which now has another new location. I've been going since they were uptown, all the way up you know, almost outside the town, the city limits, with the original location, which I remember I had to really look to find the first time. Did you ever go there, the original?
No, I haven't been.
Yeah, it was up, way up by there was a great little ice cream, a little tiny dairy bar right across from it. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Kevin Kirstein and I live at Oaklawn. Stay with us.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help